Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 136 for January 7th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well,
the
now.
Serene Joe Steinkamp.
Yes. I talked a whole bunch recently. I'm just talked out. I mean, there's this Nexus special, which is awesome and great, and a cure for insomnia. So go over to that androidshow.com and check out our long podcast on a long look at the Nexus 7.
On the Nexus 7. Oh, wait. Quite like that.
I did a really long but awesome This Year in Assistive Technology with some fantastical guests, which is up on the website at serotalk.com. That also is one that you will need a three-hour tour to enjoy. But the cool thing was is that we had so many really good comments and a fantastic top 10 countdown. And my thanks to Leonie Watson from Access Talk, to Pratik Patel, to that guy over there in Indiana who I know so well, Wade Wingler, and then, of course, JJ and Steve and myself, and then this guy, Jamie, who hung out, and, of course, Lisa, who brought it all together. Yes. For a fantastic This Year in AT. And thank goodness I don't have to do it again for another 364 days. Yay!
Yay! There was so much brain power in that chat, and there were so many great opinions. It was easy. It was so easy to do that. Talking about something else that's easy to do, let's just kind of go back, because we haven't been together for a while, and sort of ring out
you guys.
Yes, exactly.
Like, we should work together or something at a company making technology. Oh, wait. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah. See you in staff meeting. Oh,
there you go.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We can ring out the old year with 100 tech trends of 2012, and then we'll do some bring in the new year's stories. So I kind of grabbed several of these. They're, obviously, we're not going to do all 100, but you can look in the show notes and read them to your heart's content. Number one is Samsung versus Apple. I suppose that was inevitable, although I don't want to talk about it. It's just, you know, inevitable.
Yeah.
One of the stories we didn't do in This Year in AT, thank goodness, but...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
But we talked about it a bunch last year.
Fun.
Yeah. Oh, that would drive us
away from showing. We talked about the advertising, and we talked about the popularity issue, and we talked about mom's iPhone, and all of that. So it's kind of neat to think that, you know, we were kind of conversationally talking about what seems to be really hot stories, not just in AT, but in tech in general.
Right. Windows 8.
Yeah, we talked about that once or twice.
Mobile becoming a really big deal, and tablets going mainstream. Everybody knows what a tablet is. It's not just about the iPad either. There are lots of different tablets, and that trend is really expected to continue, actually.
Phablets, laplets.
Yes, you know, phablets made it on the list. They were not in the top 20, but phablets were in the list for top 100 tech stories of 2012. So there you go.
I thought of you during the holidays when I saw that Huawei, or this Chinese company, is making a 6.1-inch phone. There will actually be a phone bigger than the Galaxy Note 2's 5.5 inches.
Wow. That's a phablet for sure.
We actually did get in an email over the holidays asking if you could use the Nexus 7 as a phone through Skype and other things like that. And I had to tell them that the microphone, from your experience, in fact, Ricky, not the best for that.
Not so much. Although I recently read that somehow... with 4.2, there have been software improvements relating to the microphone. I don't know what they did. And the hum that I'm hearing, this high-pitched ringing sound, I don't know how that would be addressed by software, but I should do a an audio boo or something similar on updates to 4.2 and see if that microphone issue is a little better now.
Okay, hold it up to your head when you do, so that way you can have a 7-inch phone.
Awesome. It's what I've always wanted.
Well, how about 12 buzzwords for 2013? Some of these are fun. Some of them are just silly. I don't get a few of
these. Some of them make me want to punch things. And you know what? Phablets made it on this list, too.
It sure did. I actually like the first one, advertainment.
Yes.
Which we kind of do that here on this podcast a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, that feels a little familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one I really hated was acquired.
Yes.
A combination of acquired and hired. We acquired.
How did speech handle that?
It became acqui-hired. So I was thinking of like some water-based job placement company or something.
Hi, I'm Aquaman. I'm here to interview you today. Welcome to Atlantis. And that's very interesting.
So, Ricky, what do you think about number 5, Alphanista? That's a successful woman in power. Alphanista.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about that. It's I think there shouldn't have to be a word for it, honestly. I think that successful women in power are luckily becoming much more common. And I think it's one of those things where, just as with blindness or disability, we don't want that to be the newsworthy thing. We would rather see stories with blind people interviewed about their thoughts on politics or what have you, kind of separate from the disability issue. And for women, it shouldn't be a surprise to see a successful woman. And so, yeah, there's that.
Number 7 is something that Sarotech certainly does. I didn't realize there was a term for it, return on involvement, which is a brand that gets involved with the community. Again,
yeah,
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't really know why we need a word for that, but hey, okay. Inventrepreneurs, I just like saying that one.
That's funny.
You manufacture your own creation.
And then there's, you manufacture your own stuff and sell it. So you invented it and then you promote yourself. Of course, a lot of people might be wantrepreneurs. They want to be in business for themselves, but haven't necessarily done anything to make that happen.
And finally, number 12, tri-tasking or tri-t-tasking, doing three things at once.
Tri-t-tasking.
I can't even say it, let alone do it. So
yeah, I think that's the worst one on the list.
Agreed.
Doing totally. Three things at once. I am tri-t-tasking.
We can see that there are two Alphanistas over by the water cooler. One has noticed that they are also wearing the same colors that day. A battle ensues.
You should have called me. Now we look like twins. This is stupid.
One has thrown down her coffee cup in anger.
I've been here longer than you. I deserve to wear whatever I want.
The other cows avoids her eyes and walks away.
Fine. Whatever.
The battle won. The major Alphanista returns to her game of Farmville.
And that's how it's done, people.
Audio description described by Sarotech.
Cool. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah,
we should probably not quit our day. Oh, wait, this is our day job.
Yeah, that way.
Yeah, moving quickly onward.
So Walt Mossberg has some predictions for 2013. I didn't see anything here that just made me jump up and say, wow, I never thought of that one. So tablets are going to continue to expand and grow and be more popular. And
yeah, there's a surprise. But he did talk about something I hadn't really thought of that much for whatever reason. The really cheap $99 tablet, they're going to make some of these that are kid-specific. So you might have your toddler tablet or your tween tablet or whatever. So it's marketed to a specific segment of people.
Fisher Price, my first phablet. Awesome.
My first phablet.
Let's see, what games would you feature on there?
Well, there definitely should be a game of Simon, maybe.
Yeah.
SpongeBob-related. Sure. Blue's Clues.
Yeah, you could do that. Oh, Blue's Clues. Yeah, that would totally be great. Dora the Explorer, but I don't know if they should use the Apple Maps for that, or
help Dora find her service charges. Oh no, she's roaming.
So do we really think Twitter should go public, kind of like Facebook did last year, if it really is worth $11 billion, as some analysts are saying, and some are saying even worth more?
How do they put a value on this? It's said that Twitter has no plans to go public. I don't know about that. I think that Twitter is still trying to really find a business model. They want advertising to play a much larger role than it does currently, and so they're making some API changes to assist in that.
Those ads are huge, though, actually. And I'm not just talking about the ones that are inside the Twitter feed. I'm thinking of the ones that are actually visually displayed on the main page or on the sides now. There's just tons and tons of advertising actually now in the Twitter.com site, if you're using the web version. And that's part of the reason why they kind of pushed away all the third-party apps, because they want to get those eyeballs on those web version ads or in those promoted tweets. Or look at the trending topics. You'll get that first one is usually, you know, whatever movie promoted.
I wonder how this is handled in things like TweetDeck or Hootsuite, that are apps that aren't really accessible for blind people, but a lot of other people using Twitter will choose clients like this. And I know that there have been some API changes where things have to be displayed in a certain way in the client so as not to lose some of these ads. But I wonder, again, how are the ads handled in the client? Because typically you would see your timeline and you have different tabs for mentions and trends and things like that. Where do the ads pop up now, and how does that work? Is it like you mouse over a link and you see this big ad, or who knows? Whatever the case, though, I can't say I want to see Twitter go public. It was a little embarrassing for Facebook to have done so, and we discovered that they had really hyped the thing up so big that as the stock dropped, it was very newsworthy, and it just kept going down and down and down. It was kind of painful to watch, really.
Yeah, that definitely became the story almost the day after it went public, because, oh, wow, it's not doing as well as we thought it would. That is unfortunate.
Well, what they'll do is they'll just check into Foursquare when these things happen. So, you know, I'm standing in an unemployment line, check in. I am the mayor of this line.
Yes. I don't quite get the big deal about, I mean, I sort of do. Foursquare is going to display full names. This is for businesses mostly, right? Because for one thing, businesses can look at check-in stats for like an entire day instead of just 3 hours at a time.
The story claims that Foursquare wants to show full names because users were complaining about how confusing it was. Well, I don't know who Ricky E is, so I don't know which of my friends just checked in. I don't buy this, given that a lot of people will upload photos so as to get mayorships and other things. So I think the story was so newsworthy, though, because Foursquare was making a big deal about informing people that this change was taking place. And they're really trying to say, hey, look at our privacy page. We're being very transparent about changes that we're making. And we're being really upfront and stuff. So please look at this and read this, because we're telling you all about it. And that's kind of in direct opposition to, say, Facebook, where they make changes and you might never know about it, or if you do, it's too confusing to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just one of those. Of course, so many blind people don't like Foursquare anyway, which is, I find that interesting, and I don't know quite, because people on Facebook, you know, that I have, my sighted friends, don't seem to mind it as much, although I did do a bunch of check-ins here the other day and got teased. My wife and I went on a trip to the city, and we shopped, and I had fun with that. But I wonder if it is because of the video thing, because so many people do upload photos rather, with their posts. And I can't decide if for blind people it's just, okay, big deal, he checked in it at McDonald's, or maybe people tend to comment more. That's what I'm trying to
do. It's the value of the account. It's who you are. It's the same reason why Facebook wants to have your credit card number and do all these things with gifting that they did in 2012. It's the same reason why Google Plus and you can't really post anything on Play anymore without having your Google Plus name tied to it. And Google tries to go through and knock out zombie accounts. And even Facebook, again, if there's 1 billion accounts, but 300 million of them are just people like my wife having four or five different other names to be able to play Farmville. You know, there's a lot of value in a name. There's a lot of value in the account. So being able to have something about you or more about you or to be able to tie that to your services is very important to them because that's data they can sell to advertisers.
Right.
I feel like there's kind of a difference in audience between Twitter and Facebook. And there are people who definitely prefer one over the other. Maybe it is that people expect to see this sort of thing on Facebook. As you pointed out, Jamie, there are photos posted all the time on Facebook. That's what people do. Right. There are so-and-so played Farmville statements on Facebook, or they played this game or that game, and you can go in and block that all. But I feel like Facebook is a place where people expect to see that type of thing. And maybe it isn't a blindness thing, but rather that more of your blind friends are on Twitter than Facebook, so you notice the difference a little more.
Well, Twitter is immediate, right? Twitter is now. In fact, over the holiday break, they finally rolled out the ability to export your tweets, so you could actually see the 40,000 things you ate for lunch about six months to a year ago. Facebook is forever. Facebook is wanting that stuff to be your digital life. They are wanting you to do the digital diary thing and show all your friends. And look what they did with Timeline, in which it was, here was my wedding, and here was my birthday party, and here was, you know, my bar mitzvah, and blah, 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 blah. Twitter is more immediate. So you're right. There are two different types of audiences just in the social sphere, regardless of whether the fact you want to be able to be bothered by all the ads that are in Facebook versus the 140 character limit, which is easier to read with speech for tweets.
Well, and I think that's another part of it is as a blind person, it's tougher to skim. You can't just glance over.
I can press the up arrow pretty fast.
That's true. Well, and if you get speech clipping along pretty quickly, especially if you're, because you can, that's a good point. You can skim with speech. You can crank it up faster than you would normally, you know, if you're going to read a blog post and think about it and dissect it, you kind of slow down a little bit. But if you're just.
Or you can just, you know, you see one thing and you see that it starts with, I'm at. Mm-hmm. Then you're like, oh, no, that's Foursquare check-in. Moving on.
Yeah, but I was just thinking the other day, I really missed the deal space. Don't you, back in the day? I mean, all those lovely deal space retweets that I no, wait a minute.
What I was still I have think? A bunch of people who retweet Tetley T stuff.
Yeah.
And some other things.
And horoscope people. Okay. I'm going to hunt you down one by one.
Oh, yeah, the Twittoscope people. Yeah.
Just stop that.
Hatchy is my latest, and yes, I can skim past it, but you take care of your virtual pet. If you ever want me to babysit, you can ask. Otherwise, I don't want to know about it.
Yeah, there you go. Just stop that. You know what could take care of that is a robot. Yeah, a robot to do all your bidding. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Apple deciding that you don't need to worry about this because all this will work out in the end, and a dog and a cat relationship that you will not forget. All that and more when Serotalk 136 comes back.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech. The Accessibility Anywhere people.
After that excellent bit of advertainment, we are back on Serotalk 136. Welcome back. And if you own an iDevice, you might have been disturbed or not this New Year's Day. There was a bug where if you turned on Do Not Disturb and you had it scheduled, it would certainly turn itself on. But when it was time to let those calls and text messages and things like that come through, Do Not Disturb did not automatically turn off. And Apple says, you know what? This is going to fix itself on January 7th. So just wait. We're not going to do anything until then. If you really care about your calls and emails and stuff, you can change Do Not Disturb settings manually until January 7th when everything returns to normal.
We looked at the cost of how much it would be to send out an update out of cycle and thought, yeah, no, it'll take care of itself. It's not like Google who ate a month of December in Android. Ha 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 ha.
Totally yeah, that was cute. Well, they gave it back to us, but
that's true.
I mean, this is only a week, and it's not as if there isn't a workaround. I don't blame Apple for doing this. It's not particularly awesome that the bug happened in the first place, and they had something that happened last year as well. It was with alarms, I believe. Alarms didn't go off on New Year's Day, but I think that was just restricted to a single day, so they do have a couple of issues dealing with, you know, bugs and dates and such. But yeah, I can't really blame them. Wait a week and it'll fix itself rather than let's scramble to get something out right now.
Well, both of you guys are iOS owners and users, and I am to some extent. But do you find yourself gravitating or walking away from the iLifestyle, iMessage and mail and this and all the notifications? I mean, does that kind of shake your faith in Apple?
No, I would say not.
No, it doesn't. I guess I feel like it's software. It's going to have bugs sometimes.
Yeah.
And maybe I approach everything like that. It's going to work until it doesn't. And so then I'm rarely disappointed. Oh, today's the day when it doesn't. Okay. I'm very into iMessage and Do Not Disturb so I can turn my stuff off and not be awakened by somebody sending a lot of emails at 2 a.m. and that kind of thing. But if it doesn't work, I just think about the fact that at some point I didn't have this capability at all. My life isn't going to, you know, skyrocket into oblivion somehow if some of these things don't work sometimes.
Jamie, what do you think?
As a new Mac user, I'm just now beginning to see how much fun it is to sync. I mean, you can do it with the PC to some extent, but with a Mac, it's a little more intuitive, I suppose, and works even better. So I suppose you could say I'm just now sort of getting into the whole ecosystem in a little bigger way. So no, it's not a big deal. I saw an article from a programming standpoint of why this happened, and it had something to do with the first day of the week falling on a Tuesday, and apparently, or the first day of the month, rather. And apparently there's like some documentation for developers that Apple actually warns about this. So it's something they were aware of.
But yet apparently nobody at Apple read.
And, they got tripped up by their own, yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Cute.
It is, actually.
My wife got her update to Jelly Bean on her Android Galaxy S3. And the reason why I bring that up is that it removed some of the extra functionality that Samsung and others had done to the skin of Android and replaced it with some of the more core apps. And so I know about Google Now and love Google Now from the Nexus 7, but now that Google Now is on her phone, she's going through that moment of elation that I did with Google Now. She set my parents' house's work, like the story I've told before. And so now she called me from the road and she goes, I'm 26 minutes out from the house. And how did you know that? Google Now, you know? And so she's starting to learn more about these Google stock apps. And there was a lot of talk over the break about how iOS apps have started to kind of, the built-in bundled ones have started to kind of sort of wane. And there were some people that were very famously saying, I'm quitting Instagram. But there were also people who said, I'm quitting iOS apps. I'm using Google Maps and I'm going to use this and I'm going to use that. And that's not something I'm used to seeing, especially in the tech press. I'm used to seeing it in Google land because for every Google app there's about 3 or 5 more free other ones too. But I wasn't necessarily ready for people to kind of sort of throw down on iOS over the break.
They'll catch up or jump ahead in some area. And I think the lines are going to blur more and more. I think we'll see more and more people using both Google and iOS. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Although I realize the apps that you purchase in one ecosystem, you know, if you're really heavily invested in one, it's maybe a little harder to switch over. But, you know, I see people with Kindle apps. So it makes sense to me that at some point they might buy a Kindle Fire to, you know, if that interests them. So I look for things to just get a little more confusing as the year progresses, honestly. We wouldn't be able to do a podcast without at least one Apple rumor. And this one is such a no-brainer. We probably won't spend a whole lot of time on it. I think the big story is that it's even a story, and that is that Apple is testing iPhone 6. Really? Do you think?
Really? Maybe? I thought they were going to wait until like May 30th or so to do that.
Yeah. The whole we have to have an Apple rumor story mentality just amazes me. It's like the press does it, though, as much as anyone.
Yeah, I hope to see this drop off a little this year, not because I don't think Apple isn't important or newsworthy or anything like that, but I think that it's become over the top, really. Right. Even if you are interested in Apple, get over it. Don't try and find rumors even where there are none.
Right. So, I mean, seriously, don't be surprised if you don't see as many Apple rumors on TripleClick Home and, you know, Serotalk. If they're worth talking about, we'll talk about them. If they're not, I'm like Ricky. Let's get over it. Let's talk about stuff that really matters, maybe tips and tricks and things that don't work and things that work great and stuff like that, such as perhaps this next story. Is Apple planning to acquire Waze for their maps?
Okay, so last month it was Foursquare, and Apple's going to reach out to Foursquare and use...
And then before
that was TomTom, and now it's Waze, which some people are saying, like The Verge, may not necessarily be true, because Waze sees itself as, well, we're worth a lot more than what you want to pay, but... It seems that they are desperately trying to fix the maps issue in one way or another. And, you know, rightfully so, it was kind of a sore spot. But I don't know that this is something that would help in a way, because some people don't like Waze because of its social nature. For the same reason that some people don't believe that Foursquare was going to help out Apple Maps any better than that. Maps are hard to do, period.
Right.
Absolutely they are. And I think it depends on if they buy Waze, they have a number of ways to implement this. They don't have to have the social aspect where you see everybody basically sending out traffic updates. This dude in front of me is slow, you know, and it's 0.2 miles ahead of you. You may not want to see that. At the same time, though, I think that crowdsourcing with regard to traffic information could be incredibly useful if the people who are posting are posting relevant information and if that information is presented in a way that makes sense. So if this is done right, it could be great.
Yeah, especially with, you know, the work that Google is doing, I think Apple definitely is going to have to really add a lot more features and continue to add features to, well, obviously, fix maps, the things that are broken, and then continue to add features. I mean, I'm very fascinated by the idea that I could know I was 26 minutes away from the house. So those sorts of things, I think, would be great. iPad mini, we know that we're going to have a new one sooner or later, and probably sooner, who knows. But again, the rumors continue to swirl around that, but no shock there either. Retina is most likely coming, that sort of
probably
thing.
Probably a faster processor as well.
Retina.
Retina.
Yeah.
Better display is the big deal. And again, faster processor. I wonder what they're going to call this thing. I think it's going to be the MINII. So the II like Roman numeral 2.
I still like the iPad Junior.
Yeah.
Now we're back to my first phablet.
Right.
This is the intro iPad, you know.
But that's actually an interesting point that you reminded me of. If they are going to do these improvements, it's speculated that, well, you know, a Retina display is going to be a little more expensive, and a faster processor may jack the price up just slightly. So I'm wondering if we're going to see an increase in price with the Mini 2 or whatever it's going to be, or if they're somehow going to manage to keep the same price point.
Or they introduce it at a higher level but leave the iPad current, the iPad mini current, at $329, right. Which is no different than what they're doing with iPad 4 and iPad 2.
Or the, or the MacBook Pro or the MacBook Pro Retina. So you have two versions of that.
No, that won't be confusing at all. It's what I had talked about before, which is it's not uncommon for Apple to cannibalize themselves, but it's getting to be very crazy because Steve Jobs walked in and cut a lot of this stuff out, and they just seem to have waited a year before they started to go back to what they used to do when Steve wasn't there. Let's have more models. Let's have one in blue. Let's do this. And so it's going to get very confusing very, very soon. And it's interesting because also over the break, I was reading a lot of stories about Apple Store morale and Apple Store employee changes, and that there's a feeling that something has turned the corner in the Apple stores, and that because there are so many more of them, it's getting harder and harder to hold the quality from store to store, or that some stores that were older maintain the philosophy of when the Apple stores first started, but some of the newer stores don't have the same philosophy or same kind of drive. And that happens in retail. That's not Apple's fault. That happens in all retail. That's as you get bigger, these things happen. So I think a quality control issue is going to be very interesting. And there was also that survey that said for the first time in 4 years that Apple customer service was not as good as it had been. So there was a lot of interesting news this holiday period, along with some of these crazy rumors, which are probably true. There's going to be another X, Y, or Z. It's just when.
Including a smartwatch, maybe?
I would buy that.
I would. Yes. I think so that would buy be great. That.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't have to connect to an iPhone. It's the same way as kind of with Google Glasses, because there's talk that you're going to have to use an Android phone to kind of use Google Glasses. But man, if there is an iWatch, dude, I would so want that.
Yeah, that actually is one of the more interesting.
What would you want it to do? Because there were the Nanos and you could get watch bands for them.
Yeah, but those weren't really using VoiceOver in the way that I kind of wanted to use VoiceOver. And it just, I don't really know how to kind of sort of get this into a verbalization, but I will try. Kind of the Dick Tracy way of doing things. I really would like something, maybe if it had FaceTime, maybe if it had certain features. I mean, I like the idea of this, and I know people have been talking about it since the beginning of Kickstarter with those bands. Remember, that was the bands for the Nano that people really wanted, and that's kind of what fueled Kickstarter. But if Apple puts some serious thought into this, I mean, they already paid all that money for that Swiss clock interface that they got from the railway station. They're halfway there. You know, it would be neat to have a really neat, possibly talking watch that would be not from Radio Shack.
And didn't have a rooster alarm.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
But if you could also have just limited MP3 functionality, or even some ability to get some of your iTunes stuff, or even, like I said, a camera on it, something to that effect, I think it would be really interesting, because I don't carry one anymore. I really don't. My phone is my watch. And for a lot of people, it's like that. So in a way, it would be neat to be able to go back to having that as an accessory. And it would play into Apple's philosophy that it's about style. It's about, you know, wanting to have this and show the world that you have an Apple product and you want to aspire to purchase this. I think that's what I was thinking about.
That's exactly where my mind went when I was thinking about this, is just what you said. It's cool.
And it would be a movement towards wearable computing, which is where they have to go next. Yep. We're not going to use the phones we use in the way that we're using them in 3 to 5 years. Wearable computing is coming. I just mentioned Google Glass. I mean, that's really what's ahead of us, is these devices just become opaque. They just become part of who we are and what we do. I made the joke about the Star Trek comm badge a couple episodes ago. That is actually what we're heading towards. Imagine just tapping your chest and talking to Siri. And I think that's really close.
Have we talked about Bluetooth earrings? Because I think that would be an awesome idea.
Would you like that? Would they be blue themselves?
Like the Aftershocks headphones, but
bone conduction earrings.
Pretty earrings.
Wow. Interesting.
Okay. But we could get you that thing that Uhura sticks in her ear if you want that instead.
No, I want earrings.
No? Oh, okay. All right. You could say hailing frequencies open, you know. No?
I could do that with Bluetooth earrings too, though.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Good point.
And platinum and diamonds and things. So pretty Bluetooth earrings, I should say.
Yeah. And probably style. Rather pricey Bluetooth yes. earrings, would be my guess.
Well, imagine what
Apple
a geek.
Care on them?
What a geek Valentine gift, though. I love you so much, I bought you these platinum Bluetooth earrings.
I'm sorry, ma'am. You have to get this AppleCare in pairs, one for each earring. It's and you need a user account. You need an Apple ID for each one of these. Just letting you know.
We talk about link bait all the time, and this next article is a perfect example of that. What iPad Mini owners hate about the iPad Mini. When you read the article, it's what basically all tablet owners dislike about their various tablets.
Yeah, but they really did stretch in this article.
Yeah, like, yeah. It doesn't have enough space on it.
Yeah.
Even though
yeah.
It has the same storage capacity as pretty much every other tablet.
Yeah, right. Or iPod or iPhone. I mean, this has existed in the iDevice world for quite some time. But the ones about the Nexus 7, I do agree with. There's some good points there about some of the way that the display looks and some of the reaction times to it, which I kind of sort of agree with. But I think the iPad Mini one, and the biggest one here is Retina, no Retina. And we thought that was going to happen. It certainly didn't stop them from selling 8 million of them, which was a little lower than they had thought. But everybody kind of saw a downturn. Nook didn't sell as well as they thought they were going to sell. Amazon put their fires on sale. So there may be a little bit more to that. But in the long run, like we talked about, you know, people are going to buy these things at some point or another if the price point stays the way it is or if features get better.
Give us your thoughts, resources@serotalk.com. Leave us an iReport over on iBlink Radio on your iPhone or your Android device. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, we've come here today to recognize and eulogize the netbook. Yea, we do remember you little boxes of joy when you worked correctly. Or when you actually decided not to overheat while sitting in my lap. Yes, netbook, you have done your duty, you have done your job, and now you are commensely exiled to the landfill in Arizona next to 1 million ET Atari cartridges.
Throw thy roses on the tiny casket of the netbook as it is lowered into the ground.
Shed not a tear, for in a million years, this too may become a parking lot and have use again of the netbook. So saith Acer, who killed the netbook this week, along with another company who, golly, I didn't know there were two companies that still made these things. The rumors, of course, are that the reason why these, you know, are going away is that tablets sell a lot more. Well, okay, right. But also the Ultrabook and the need for more powerful hardware, which I think is much more along the lines of that. The Atom processor was never a strong processor to begin with. It was like two Celerons taped together. And so having a, Core i5 or a Core i7 in an Ultrabook is kind of a neat thing. And so therefore, there's really no place in the netbook. And it never really made these companies money. Dell, Gateway, all of them. It was such a razor margin on these that they just never really were going to turn the corner on them. The irony is that if you look at some of the analysts who had made bold predictions, there would be 131 million netbooks sold this year, Ricky.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would continue to sell until 2016, Jamie.
Wow.
Sure they would.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Sure. Well, what's interesting to me is that I'm hearing some people say that the Ultrabook is dead on arrival. And I don't know. We're in a weird time because one of the reasons why the netbook is dead is because it didn't really address some of the things that people kind of hated about their laptops and wanted in a better device. Like a netbook is not instant on. Yeah, you can open it and it'll come out of standby and stuff like that, but it's pretty much as slow as a laptop when it comes to doing that, whereas a tablet really is a lot more instant. The form factor was an issue for a lot of people. You know, much tinier screen, smaller Chiclets keyboard that they didn't like to type on. Yeah.
I never did use a netbook. I've touched them, but never actually played with one. So
I used a netbook as my primary machine for a year, and it sucked!
My wife almost bought one. I mean, she really liked it. She really wanted one, but we decided to go ahead and get a laptop instead. You know, there are people who still have them, and we'll eventually have to decide to get rid of them. And
they're going to be running really, really slow as, you know, software gets more and more robust to meet the needs of Windows 8. In fact, I would even say that if you can't move that thing to Windows 7, you've got about 14 months of life left as we rapidly approach the end of Windows XP and Office 2003's lifespans.
Well, there you have it. The death of the netbook. Once again, provided by the Serotalk Podcast Network. Well, let's have a parade, shall we? Brass bands, cotton candy, all that good stuff.
Ooh, that sounds good. But I want to know what all those floats look like. I mean, you know, that's a big, huge part of the parade, the floats. And who's going to describe that stuff to me?
Well, as a matter of fact, the good people over at the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service did just that again in 2013. They broadcast the 124th Tournament of Roses Parade in Pasadena, California. And for the second year in a row, we over here at the Serotalk Podcast Network had the privilege of broadcasting that on SPN Radio. I listened to that and enjoyed it very much. I was busy with Twitter and some other things, so we will eventually have an audio archive of that parade. It'll be about 2 hours once it gets edited and gets put up. And I'm personally looking forward to listening again so I can just kick back and just enjoy the parade. But it was really well done. They did a really good job, I think, of balancing the ambiance of the parade with the audio descriptions. It's tough if you don't have gazillion dollars like you know, the major networks do, and stereo microphones and placed along the parade route. If you're dealing with any kind of a budget at all, you know, hey, it's not going to be quite the quality that maybe you'd want it to be. But I think with what they had to work with, they did a great job this year.
It really was fantastic.
An app I have not played with, but apparently the New York Times app for iOS is it has some improved accessibility that comes from Maccessibility. Those good folks over there, Josh DeLioncourt. So, Ricky, have you had a chance to play with the app? I always ask you that every time we talk about these things.
Sadly, for this one, I haven't, but I do want to say that it's really exciting to, at least in my mind, and I know that there are people in the know because somebody's got to be testing this stuff, but in my mind, it's almost like randomly apps appear with the updates and the release notes talk about accessibility. And it sort of seems to come out of nowhere. And it seems to be happening a little more often these days. We recently had the Nook app release with a lot of great accessibility. And if you haven't checked that app out, you should. And of course, this one from the New York Times, you can read a lot of content for free with this app. And you can, of course, subscribe to a digital edition of the New York Times as well if you're interested in seeing all that content.
So do you think it's fair to say that there is some quiet advocacy, very professional advocacy going on behind the scenes?
That is my thought, yes. Yeah. And that's exciting. I don't think that there's anything wrong with a group of people standing up and shouting from the rooftops, hey, we want this. But there are times when, for whatever reason, that just doesn't work. It may be that the right contacts aren't paying attention to that sort of advocacy, whereas someone who is quietly doing this on their own or in a small group may have found the appropriate person to interface with. So it is my hope that that's what's going on. What I don't want to see is companies who are doing this kind of on their own and doing what they think we want and then not really listening to any input from the community. Because if you don't beta test this stuff, now, if you follow the Apple accessibility guidelines, you've got a pretty good shot at doing well with this. But if you don't get some input from your community that you're trying to address, then you release this app and the community says, hey, I don't know what you thought you were doing, but this isn't accessible. And that's very discouraging to both the developer and the community.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking of there are a lot of apps that have some buttons that aren't as wonderfully labeled as they could be, but they're good enough that it's possible to figure out what they do. And it is possible to label buttons, which I think I've done about one or two times, honestly.
Yeah.
It's just a feature I never really use, but it's there. But yeah, there are so many possible variables, things that can kind of go wrong with an app being accessible, that I am with you. It really does need to be beta tested by blind users who can say, hey, this almost works, but it could work a little better if you did this, this, and this.
And not just the original app, later releases as well, because what will happen as anybody will go over to Apple this and take a look at is that an app can start off really good, but maybe it'll get handed off to another developer, or maybe there's a different contractor, or something will happen, and that guy will go, why are we doing all this extra code? Knock that out. And so then you're having to go back and work with the app developer all over again. And I mean, that kind of thing happens.
I mean, if you're Foursquare, it's even a little worse.
Tune in radio.
This would be funny if it weren't true. I can think of at least four times when Foursquare has released an update and maybe half an hour to an hour later, oh, we're really sorry. It turns out that there's not a lot of accessibility in this update. We broke a bunch of stuff. We'll have a fix out soon. And for it to happen once is certainly okay.
Yeah.
Twice is, hey, you might want to test this before it goes out so you don't have to go back and do some work. But four times or possibly more? What's up with that?
What happened with this latest update? Because I just saw don't update, and so I didn't, but I don't know what actually got broken.
I don't recall. I just remember seeing that something was broken and then seeing that a fix was on the way. And don't get me wrong, Foursquare, we really appreciate that you do actually fix these things when they're broken, but I think that perhaps a better process where accessibility testing is a part of the release cycle, that's going to save everybody some work.
And if you do any type of resources like what David Woodbridge does, or what AppleVis does, what AndroidAccess.net does, what we do in certain situations with other apps that we talk about, you have to go back and test those updates because things do change. Look at Pat Pound and her updated list of accessible apps.
Yeah.
This is a really great list, actually. There are over 70 apps on here, and they're divided by category, including a miscellaneous category. There are GPS apps like Navigon and Ariadne GPS. Of course, Sendero Lookaround makes it into that category, and then there are things for, say, object recognition like Omobi and VizWiz, and a couple of other things where you purchase labels and do audio recordings for those labels. There's some word processing apps here and a ton of other stuff. So definitely check this list out if you think you might not have enough iPhone apps in your arsenal.
Coming up after the break, the mailbag and then a seeing eye cat, really? Right here on the Sarotalk podcast.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
We're back here on Serotalk Podcast 136, first one of the new year. Toward the end of last year, we released a feedback special, and that was a lot of fun to put together. Always enjoy hearing from you, the listener, and we always tell you every week we don't always get to everything that comes in. And so we kind of keep those and hang on to them for our feedback specials. I feel pretty confident that we'll be able to do number 3 before the year is out. So kind of stay tuned and keep an ear out for that. Coming up now, we have the mailbag.
All right, let's dive right into this nice giant mailbag. And let's see, it's almost like drawing names. Which audio file are we going to pull out first? Let's have this one from Bruce.
Yes, this is Bruce in Little Rock. Just a positive note about Audible, which is a part of Amazon. Been an Audible customer for many, many, many years. Before, when they first started on the Internet, they actually brought in people for accessibility of their website. The only thing I haven't been able to figure out how to do on the iPhone is to delete a book, and it's a great group of people working with accessibility from the beginning. The other comment that I had was regarding cassette tapes. I have 2 full cases of cassette tapes in a closet that are never used, old tapes, old memories, everything. I guess the greatest memory that I have is my youngest child died at 13 months, and I actually have her playing with somebody and playing around the room on the cassette tape, and it's really the only that type of memory that I have, so I really treasure that. I'm going to have to get it into some kind of digital format. You have a great show. Have a great holiday season, and hope to hear your show soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bruce, for that, and you're absolutely right about how Amazon has done something right with Audible. I would love to see them apply this same strategy to Kindle, of course. And you're also right about the fact that really precious memories can be stored on cassette tapes. And luckily, we do have the ability to digitize those if you have a cassette player somewhere still that works, and you've got a sound card in your computer, you'll be able to turn those into MP3s, and then you don't have to worry about the tape breaking or something happening, you know, getting lost in a flood, that kind of thing. Amazing the kind of things we have stored on this old medium. Up next, we've got a message from Chris.
Hey, Serotalk podcasters. This is Chris calling in from Maryland. And I would like to comment on 2 things that you were talking about in the last great podcast you did, Serotalk Podcast 135. First of all, you were talking about the iOS accessibility of the Amazon Instant Video app. And you were talking about how Amazon says, oh, well, we made it accessible on iOS, so all you blind people need to go to that. I agree with all of you guys that that's not enough. Besides the fact that they need to make all platforms accessible, I think it's also important because schools, if this WhisperCast thing actually explodes like Amazon is hoping that it will, schools will be using the Kindle readers, not the iOS apps. So students, blind students, are going to be stuck with inaccessible readers that they're expected to use. So I agree with you guys for that reason, that they need to make it accessible on all platforms. The other thing is about the tape recording. I just have a little bit of a funny story here. I've always been a radio geek, somewhat, to the point where when I was playing with cassette recorders, I was taking music that I had on CDs or cassette tapes, dubbing them, and making my own pretend radio show. And I still have a lot of those tapes.
I've got to say, Chris, I actually felt kind of nostalgic when you were talking about doing your radio show. Maybe all of us did this, and it was such fun. And I'm sure it's fun to listen to those things if you still have them. My radio shows didn't have music involved, but I would do a talk radio show, and I had this bizarre way to mimic what it sounded like, for a caller to call in. I won't go into how I did that exactly, but it sounded very similar to having a caller come in on a phone patch, and I would do all these impressions to be my different guests. So it's probably a good thing I
she
don't still have any
for
of those.
EOL way back then. Look at her
way
go.
Back then.
I would pay $100 for one of those cassettes.
Well, I would pay that and more to get back mixtapes I might have made for Lost Loves and burn the tapes.
That would be cathartic, yes.
Yeah. There may have been some profound professions of emotions that I really wish were not necessarily on analog tape that may show up on eBay and haunt me forever. I don't know. But, when you were in radio, you might have made a mixtape once or twice for girls to impress them. Anyway, yeah, I think we've all done that once or twice. And, sure. But it's neat because we don't think about these things being lost. And, I mean, the sighted world has this with photographs. And, where is your pictures taken? One of the stories over the break was the Instagram saga and how some people were ready to get out of Instagram because Instagram was going to possibly sell images or your images in advertisements. And so we don't think about that. But, some of these mementos and keepsakes are private for a reason, but the internet is a dangerous thing. And there is the hacker ethos that information wants to be free, and anything on the web is infinitely copyable. So be careful what you put up there, including Snapchat. Surprise! Some people can actually still get that information and hold it against you.
We will not hold anything against you if you send us an email, resources@saratalk.com, or, as I said earlier, an iReport over on iBlink Radio or on your Android device. It's time now for Roundabout. I did not realize, apparently I have a little bit of a technology phobia thing that is emerging here. We have this story of this robot vacuum cleaner that Samsung is maybe going to unveil at CES next week. But this thing is going to just sort of like have tentacles that kind of come out from it to get in the angles. And so my mind goes to keep out of the way of small children and pets. I'm not looking at the benefit of this thing at all. I'm frightened by it here.
You think it's going to it's going to suck up the cat.
Yes.
It was a hairball.
I was thinking that the marketing for this should not be called the face hugger, because that would just make me think of aliens and aliens.
Yeah, that would be a problem. It definitely would be. Welcome our robot overlords, but I've always been fascinated by this, even though I've never seen even a Roomba in action. I like the idea that you can program virtual walls so you keep the thing from tumbling down the stairs and all that. Never seen one of these do its thing, but it's really fascinating. And of course, I also wonder about the accessibility of it. And I wonder if anyone is considering, though I'm not sure why they would.
Dave Wilkinson, he's had Roombas.
Come out with an iPhone app to control one of these things or an Android app. I don't care.
Dave used to call me years ago, back when he and I were both at former positions at other places, and go, oh, listen, it's going around the room now. And I'm like, okay, great, but I had one of those little police cars that used to bump into walls, back up 3 feet, then turn around and bump into walls. It was a toy we had in the 70s, and that's what I always think of when I think of these autonomous-y things, is that it's gonna bounce all over my house and I'm never gonna pay attention, or the battery's gonna die and I'm gonna step
over
on
the
it
TV.
I don't know that I need this per se. It's not that I don't clean my house. I do. But Do you believe in that it gets everything? You know, it's you know, it didn't get that corner because it just can't get back there, you know?
Yeah, I wish I could see one of these things in action. And okay, it doesn't have to be controlled by another device. Why not just yell at it like you do the Kinect? You know?
Yeah.
Roomba, clean the stairs. And off it goes.
Down, ba-dunk-a-dunk-a-dunk-a-dunk. It's like a turtle on its back, and it's waving tentacles everywhere. And
trying to ride itself.
Exactly.
What other robot devices would you, our wonderful listeners, like to see? We'd kind of be interested to know what creative uses we could put to this technology. I can think of, go get me a sandwich. We've done the robot guide dog. That was 2011. So
yep.
It's time. It's time for another robot thingy that we
definitely
can all rally around and believe in and embrace. Yeah.
Robots need hugs too. Yes, embrace them.
Speaking of like warm, feel good, huggy things, this final story for this week is, well, it's just sweet. I don't know any other word to use.
It is.
A lady named Judy Godfrey has a dog who is 8 years old and who has cataracts. And so the dog became blind and, you know, unable to get around much at all, just kind of stayed in one spot and didn't venture out at all. So Judy took in a stray cat, which immediately went to the dog and led the dog around, took it outside. I mean, it's a true story. And it's just, I don't know. I always say animals are so smart. People that don't own animals, I don't know if they really appreciate that.
Yeah, animals are incredibly smart and sensitive in a way that humans are not often.
Yeah.
Or the dog was just being very careful while the cat's going, I'm a little, just a little further. Nope, psych. I'm over here by the mailbox. Nope, psych.
I wonder how this works exactly. The article talks about how the cat kind of will guide the dog with its paw. Maybe it just kind of nudges the dog's side, or maybe it's kicking the dog in the rump. That means forward.
Yeah.
Who knows where who wants to go?
Well, obviously question. The cat, the dog is really lucky to exist in the same room with the cat, much less get a say in where they're going. So
I would have to think pretty well that decided. This was a vocational opportunity for the cat to give back to society because the cat really hadn't done much prior to this. So, you know.
I think the cat just wants someone along to observe its snappy wit and grace and things like that, and the dog was available. So, yeah, you're coming with me.
Or the fact that the dog kind of felt, you know, sorry for the cat because the cat didn't necessarily have a whole bunch of friends around, and so it said, you know, I'll have a conversation with you in lieu of the opportunity for you to be a socially friendly animal. And after all, I am man's best friend, so not a problem. I can help you out there. I'm a friendly animal.
Well, it turns out they really are good friends. They curl up and sleep together and everything. So it's cute.
So the cat serves a dual purpose. It's a fuzzy pillow. Awesome.
Yeah.
I like how Jamie totally stayed quiet on this whole cat dog thing. That was very, very interesting.
I was trying to think of some puns, like let's pause for a moment, or this had a rough
says Jamie
beginning.
Pause. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yes. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. It's a perfect way to end the podcast.
That's right. It is.
Oh, what a catastrophe. Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree there.
Oh, my. And notice he still didn't vote. Well, you know where we vote, so I already expect the praise of my decision to come in through comments.
I like both cats and dogs.
Yeah, this is true. You do.
You have to know the place is all.
You do have both.
I'm a cat owner. I'm smart enough. No, there's something in it for the cat. The cat is not going to.
Yeah.
This is
not altruistic.
Where no, it is not. Just keep telling me. Where's the food bowl? Just let me know. Scoring here.
Yep. Exactly. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our first Saratok podcast of the new year. But never fear, there is lots more. Is lots more? Are lots more? We got a bunch of stuff coming up in the new year. So Stick around. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us one more time. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.